Hi, I'm Josh, and my favorite part of the novelization of X-Men First Class is the Banshee chapter.
There you go.
Hi, I'm Matt, and I had a thing about Stung that I just forgot, and at this point, I wish I could just stay dead, and the rest of the show could continue over my dead body.
Oh, there you go. Look at you. Look at you falling on the
trifecta.
Sword. Look at you. It is. It just like goes right back to that picture of you with the little halo. It's so cute. This is Charlie down in Austin, not up in the frozen tundra of the north. It's Charlie down in Austin. I don't know if you see those like tourist commercials from time to time, like Viking Cruise Lines. You see the ones for, you know, visiting Florida, visiting the Bahamas, whatever. That's the weirdest one. It's like this one recently for Brandenburg, Germany, which was so odd. It's like the angry bloodthirsty cheese comes from angry bloodthirsty wasp cow mutants. Brandenburg, Germany.
And we have been here all alone for years on Harsh or Hot Time. So this week we watched a number of films. Are they films this week? Are they flicks this week?
Little column A, little column B.
Some motion pictures we watched this week.
I'd say there's a nice collection of little engines that could.
Yes. I like that.
For very different reasons.
So if you think you can, let's talk about the shorts that we watched this week. The first one is, I don't know, it was a singular time commitment, I feel like. I mean, you sit down for this, you better have a snack.
And you better
God, it drags, man. I mean, it's like, I just felt like by the fifth chapter, and I was like, God, I don't know, they keep track of the characters. It was like, they go back to 16th century France. I was like, jeez, Benny.
No, you watched that one Hellraiser sequel again. You watched that.
Yeah, I was wondering why Ben Wyatt was there. I was like, wait a minute. What the hell's going on?
Nice. I don't know. I kept checking the time code on this one. I was like, oh, yeah. God, it's 5 seconds. That's
you fall
10
asleep,
seconds.
And then you, like, wake back up, it's still going. Like, God, Lee.
If you're falling asleep in, like, 5 second increments, you should probably consult a medical professional.
Right. That's very true.
Because this short is called Stay Dead or Quédate Muerto. And it is 17 whole seconds long. And, you know, your basic, like, there's a lady, and then there's a floaty skull thing, and she's like, stay dead! And it's like, nah! And then, and then it eats her, you know? So, I thought this was pretty neat, honestly. It's, you know, it's not like a stunning narrative construct or anything,
mm-mm.
But it was pretty effective. I thought that thing was creepy.
Yeah, and this is one where the conceit was it was a 17-second film festival. Like, that was the idea, is you had to do something like this. If I remember correctly, I believe that was what I found out when I looked into it. But what I liked about this is, one, yeah, the thing is creepy enough, but the way she delivers the only dialogue in that, which is just stay dead. It's not, you know, like someone pointing a gun at someone and yelling it. It's not someone, you know, whatever. What to me made this so interesting is the way she delivers the line and what she's doing running out of the room with the knife. We're watching the moment between Michael Myers falling out the window and Michael Myers getting up and leaving. We're watching the moment between the kill and the double tap. And so that is her stay dead delivery of that line to me is a quick prayer, hoping what worked has finally stopped the monster. And then we're getting the reveal that no, it did not. This is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I really like that it's not like a quip or, like you said, an angry thing or anything. It is that just fervent plea to the heavens, like, dear God, let it stay dead this time. Did you get that maybe she's had a couple of tries already?
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, despite, you know, zero actual, there's really nothing even about her that's too beat up. The knife is clean, all that. The house doesn't seem particularly disheveled. But that line and that delivery imply this is an ongoing battle, and she's just really hoping whatever she just did in the other room before she ran on that corner has done it. And, of course, we learn no. And I thought that was really effective and really cool.
That creature is super cool looking.
Very simple, but cool.
It's kind of akin to the, like, the little Halloween decorations that are a plastic skull in a veil.
Yes.
But it had some effects on it. I thought that it was genuinely unnerving. I liked it a lot. So, yeah, I'd say watch this one.
Me too, definitely.
I would say, sure, it's 17 seconds. I wasn't as impressed as y'all. I did not like the fact that it was a monster. I wish that it was not a monster. Because, like, the idea of stay dead or whatever, which is a nerve-wracking thing to say, because that line by itself is really great. I mean, that line is just, it's very chilling. You know, it's like, ooh, mm-hmm. really gives you the willies. But, I mean, so that monster by itself is cool, and then that line is great. But combined, I did not care for that. Also, like, she looks down the one hallway, and then the thing is there. And then she looks down the other hallway, and they're like, oh, the thing's over there. And it's back over this way, and it keeps getting closer. And I was thinking, like, either this monster's got, like, a monster bazooka, so it knows that it can't be, oh, it's just going to lay waste to this lady. But it's like, why creep closer other than to affect the audience? Because, like, that creeping closer sure. bit affects us. But for her, like, you know, if you get closer, you're within knife range, theoretically. So like,
no, that
and
makes
if
sense.
She's, you know, and so I hate to be such a, it's not a stick in the mud, but it just sort of like, you know, the disparate parts are super, super cool. I just, together, I was just sort of like, and this is okay.
No, you're right, though, because that, the whole reason to be in the opposite place in a way that is never revealed to her, that is done purely for the omniscient audience's perspective.
Well, and like what Josh,
which
what
makes
Josh
the short
said
really
time,
cool and creepy, but is also, yes, as a killer motivation is dumb.
Well, it's like what Josh said one time. I don't remember what the movie was, but he was talking about like it's like she's gonna be so surprised I can make the sound just like the monster. It's gonna be so great, you know, like you know the idea of like being stabbing before checking kind of thing. And
sure.
It's like that is really the ultimate thing with this is that it keeps getting closer, and I was just sort of like, why are you closer? Like you know, why are you closer? Weapon, stingy bit, something.
Well,
like what is it that's allowing you the confidence to get closer to this lady?
To be fair, I think it's always for due. But
right. I think it's just trying to scare her, you know. That,
well, that may
that's
be part of
the
yeah,
local
that's a good
monsters
point.
40, you know.
No, that's right. Part,
it's union rules. If you're a monster, you have to do that thing.
Yeah, Leslie Vernon taught us that. Yeah.
That's very true.
I like with that one, though, it's not like it's way behind her. She looks away, she looks back, it's closer. It's she keeps turning in both directions. And it just kind of teleports to always be in front of her instead of always be behind her. So that's a different animal, kind of.
Yeah, no, that's no, like, good point, Josh. That's a very good point. I hadn't
like,
thought about that.
Bitch, you just call me MasterCard because I'm everywhere you want to be.
Wow.
Nobody else uses that line?
They're, no!
When you have a 4 or 5 year old kid, they are just constantly underfoot, right? Or if you have a dog, they are constantly underfoot. That's why they call it dogging your footsteps, because they just do.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the third or fourth time that I turn around and whatever creature under 4 foot tall is right there and I trip, I go, you are MasterCard. You are everywhere I want to be. And they have no idea what I'm talking about, but I get a kick out of it.
That's fair.
And you ask if they have any great Poupon.
Is it Visa that's... Is it Visa that's everywhere you want to be, though?
I have no idea.
I think Visa's Visa's the cool guy, and then MasterCard's sort of the hanger-on, I believe, but I don't really know if... Who knows?
I think MasterCard's priceless. All right, all of this is really important.
Truly.
Show.
Any rate.
Yeah.
The next short.
Yeah, the next short.
The next
I have
short,
to give
the next short I will say, I love this very, very much. So thank you to these people who made it, because it is wonderful.
Right. Yeah, this short is called Over My Dead Body, or Sobre Mi Cuerpo Muerto.
Nice.
And there's a zombie apocalypse outside this lady's house, and she doesn't know?
I guess.
Because she's waiting for her blind date who shows up and is a zombie, and go.
And is it not just overflowing with charm and just funny,
but
adorable awkwardness?
The dialogue and all the awkwardness is just like a date. But it just happens to be that it's the Mad Libs of zombie stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's just all that stuff is just all the normal stuff that can happen in that kind of awkward social situation. But mm-hmm. you're just adding in the zombie element. And I just want to kiss the movie on the mouth for that. Because like, you don't have to, like, don't make it a zombie thing. Make it an awkward, write a really good introduction, a blind date introduction. Like, write that really good. but then add the zombie stuff, you know, like that's, and I really think that's neat. And it feels so well done and so sincere in that regard. I thought that was really cool.
And to your point, when, I mean, when he shows up and is a zombie, she's clearly a little freaked out. And then she offers him some wine. He's like, oh, I can't actually really drink much anymore since the whole. She's like, oh. And then she has that moment of like, no, I don't think it's going to work. And he goes, was it the wine thing? he goes to the most mundane thing.
How would that work? Like lots and lots of tofu. Like, it just lines like that are just
like he doesn't go, is it because I'm a zombie? Like, is it because I'm a zombie? It's like the fourth thing he asks.
Yeah.
Her, and that is so goddamn funny. Like, oh, I love this one.
Yeah, I really, really dug this.
And mad
this
credit
great.
To both the actors here, too, because I feel like their delivery on everything and their expressions and their characterizations are really, really good, which, of course, then also goes to the writing and directing. But, like, it feels like this was firing on all cylinders, and I loved this when I found it. It reminded me of the same kind of joy I had watching, was it Crazy for You?
Oh, yes.
You know, it reminded me very much of that, and I hoped you guys would like it in the way we liked that, because it is just buckets of charm.
I'm happy for both of you.
Oh, you're that guy.
Yeah.
When did you become the Russian judge, dude?
All right, Babadook.
Fair enough. Okay. No, that's, to be fair enough.
I mean, this is... The premise in this is My Boyfriend's Back, and My Boyfriend's Back did it so well.
That movie was terrible.
That I was just like, we're doing this again. The like, it's because I'm dead, isn't it? Like, eh. And it, like, the guy kept switching, like, doing that, like, gravelly zombie voice as a joke, I guess. And
but people
then
do that on first dates. They're like, I want to try to be this charming thing. And then it's like, it's not so charming. And it's awkward instead. And
to be fair, Charlie, you and I might do that. Josh is so goddamn smooth.
He's never actually had
an awkward moment on a date.
Yeah, considering how well it turned out for him, I think we have no place to talk there. So.
Actually, no, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
I think what I would say is that I went on so few dates.
You didn't have time to fuck them up?
I mean, like, I dated a girl in high school. I think I dated two girls in high school. I dated zero girls in college. And then I dated a girl in high school after I was out of college. So, yeah.
And then you got married. And that's...
Yeah, that was a long... that was a long distance thing. So, you know, all our awkwardness came out in the form of email. So, I don't know.
I feel like you owe the world 3 more years of awkwardness, because the rest of us have to put up with a lot of that shit.
On the other hand, when you're talking about, like, so there was this woman I was going out with, and we were talking about movies, and then we had sex, and then later there was this different woman 2 days later that I was talking with and had sex. That is not a story that I can relate to.
That's
really
true.
So there are trade-offs in life. You know, some people have nice things. I have 2 kids.
I'm trying to decide if you were listing those things in contrast.
Right. Well, it's like some people have, you know, like 4 game consoles and they play video games 8 hours like a day.
Yeah,
I have
2
kids.
Yeah, some people have the ability to pay their bills. Other people have child support.
Yeah, and so instead of the, you know, ability to buy shit in free time, I have these 2 kids, which I think are awesome.
Sure.
But at the same time, There's no reason for anybody to envy me, for fuck's sake.
Well, no, that's obvious. You do a podcast.
Right. Getting back in,
this has become a weird community access television roundtable. What the fuck are we doing?
I don't know.
Christ on a cracker.
Oh, if this is your first episode, it's not usually like this.
Yeah, we never go off on tangents and talk about random shit or denigrate ourselves or others.
Nope.
Getting back to this, I don't know. I just felt like it... It was a really obvious joke that got really ground down to the nubs by the end of it, and I didn't think it was that funny to begin with. I didn't like that dude and his character. I didn't get how, like, you know, like, if we're gonna be sticklers for things making sense, she's like, oh, there's a zombie apocalypse? Oh, like, everybody's dead? But my friend just set me up on a date with you. Wait, what? What? It's just so awkwardly getting to their premise that it just, yeah.
Well, but
it just felt like a lot of, there wasn't a lot of thought in there.
But as a hypothetical though, like let's take all those little fuckers from Cooties, and let's send them out in that town. And if all it, and the, change the disease a little bit, just say it's anybody, not just kids. Like all they have to do is run by somebody and scratch them once, and then they're done. Then they go bruh, and they go scratch somebody else. That lady could have gone to bed for a solid 8 hours to go to sleep, and that shit can move, you know. So it's sort of like
talking about how all the other zombies are grah brain zombies, and he's a talking one.
Right, yeah, and the thing is, I found all that to be weird. Immaterial because all I cared about was the relationship happening in front of me.
Well, and I can see Josh, from what Josh is saying, though.
Of caring about that, you know.
Yeah.
But I could see what Josh is saying, though, like, because I was thinking that you could have had a little bit, you could have had a slightly wider brushstroke to his getting to the door and or a second pass at her not knowing about the zombie apocalypse, like being like, oh, that disease thing? Or, oh, that thing that they've been talking about in the news? Or, you know, something just kind of something, you know, maybe where sure. you could flesh that. Not and to a point where you're explaining shit for 5 minutes, but, like, just something. So, yeah, I mean, to Josh's point, I think there could be more there.
I mean, I get what you mean in that regard. But, I mean, that does bring – it brings to mind, because we're watching a short, the thing that will be beaten into your head if you do improv – by any improv instructor, which is two people talking about something is the worst thing that can ever possibly happen. The example that popped up on a podcast I listened to that is hosted by improvisers this last week was, you know, if two people walk up and they go, oh, man, my mom is so ugly you wouldn't believe it. Really? That's weird. I know. If you don't instead come up and go, oh, my God, you are so ugly, mom, and let us see that actual relationship. Like, whatever you're going to have your characters talk about, we should instead be watching them do. Mm-hmm. And if you have two characters, despite the silliness or the creativeness or hilarity of the situation you put them in, talking about shit that's happening outside those walls, that's going to be annoying as shit and dumb, and they should instead be shooting outside those walls and showing that. Because if the characters can talk about how nutty it is and how they can't believe it, then we should be watching them in the nuttiness, unable to believe it. You know what I mean? I think they did what they set out to do, which is that shit is secondary in as much as you need a sentence or two to get us to where we are with a funny premise is a chick finds out she's on a blind date with a zombie, go. And all we really deal with is the chick's blind date with a zombie, and the rest of that is really immaterial because it would just turn into a very talky scene.
Yeah.
Sure, but from there, you either don't do the whole, oh, there's a zombie apocalypse happening, because that doesn't make much sense.
Mm-hmm. No, which I agree. I totally agree.
You don't throw in that everybody else is grah zombies and I'm not, because that also doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as soon as he said, like, outside the door, he's like, it's your blind date, Fred. I'm like, oh, he's a zombie. Like, right. Okay, so.
So I thought it was going to be an ogre.
Like, so I was thinking, like, okay, so we're probably in a world where there are zombies walking around and they're more. Like, you're...
like a Romero zombie?
Yeah, like, they're brainy zombies, though. You know, they're talking and walking around.
Oh, okay.
But they're... I was trying to think of that movie with... I don't remember anything about it. Based on the Italian comic. With the guy who's got the zombie buddy who's constantly decomposing as they're going through.
Oh,
Dylan Dog?
Yes.
Yeah, Dylan Dog. So I was thinking, like, maybe there are Dylan Dog-style zombies out there. And then you don't need any more of that shit. Like, if we're talking about getting straight to the point, mm-hmm. just, like, here is the thing. There are people and there are zombies. And she was expecting a person. Her friend set her up on a blind date with a zombie. If there are lots of zombies about, but there are also lots of people about, then that premise makes sense.
Because
mm-hmm. friend is like, well, Barbara's been alone for a while. She can't afford to be picky. That he's a really nice guy. He's mm-hmm. got a great personality. Like, that setup works so much better than what they stuck me with.
And again, I think that just is a matter of you're not meant to care. And so if you do, you're going to be disappointed. If you don't, you can just watch it for what they actually do give you that is the meat of the scene.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're wrong, because you're right. The same thing stuck out to me, too. I just didn't care. But, all right,
so
yeah,
these,
you're absolutely
these two
right.
dudes, these two dudes say watch it, I say don't.
Fair enough.
Is that accurate?
No, it is. Yeah,
that's accurate.
I'll allow it this time.
If you're lucky.
Let me tell you something, buddy. Anyway, so moving on to our feature film presentation movie shows.
for theaters.
Feature film, movie show presentations, I feel. Let's do Stung or Picado.
Picado.
Just I like that actually a lot.
You got Picard. Yeah, Jean-Luc. Anyway, Stung is a movie about slightly big wasps that can then lay eggs in people, and when the eggs hatch, they kind of take on some of the aspects of the thing that they were laid in. So you get bigger and very slightly human wasps up to, you know, your 6 and 7 foot tall wasps through the course of the thing.
I was really surprised by that, by the way, just to put that out there right away, is when we were watching this and you have, like, their weird-ass little garden party, getting everybody getting stung with wasps and shit. I was like, oh, shit, like, that's going to be tough to get away from. And then you get, people-sized wasps. I was like, I did not see that coming. I was expecting this to be, you know, a more flighty, flappy version of Squirm. Like, I didn't realize I was buckling in for Food of the Gods dose or whatever. Like, okay. And then, like, I was like, all right. And that does bring me to my warm spot for this film, as well as kind of my bittersweet comparison for this film, is this film is very much in the vein of Slither.
Yeah.
But is not quite there. I love it. You can tell it's got the heart, but it doesn't quite nail the humor, doesn't quite nail the charm.
Doesn't nail the characters.
You know, yeah, like, ooh. But it's like, it is clearly of that school, and I like it. But I want something to give that little extra nudge so that I can wholeheartedly embrace it and shout fuck yeah when something happens like I do for Slither.
It is 25% as bonkers as it needs to be.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they just had to go farther over the top, you mean?
It is surprisingly subdued for a movie where you have wasps bursting out of people.
Which is pretty cool. I gotta admit, it's fucking cool.
Yeah, that shit like,
that's gross.
So we got
the Milfy lady with her head, like part of her head on the leg.
Oh my god,
thing.
That's so good!
Yeah,
I mean, that's
always have a little bit of skin stuck to him.
Yeah, that's some Rob Bottin shit right there.
Yeah,
that's good.
Man.
So our basic premise here is we've got a young lady who's just starting a catering business that she ran with her dad, and her dad died, and so now she's running it on her own. And we have her assistant / reluctant love interest.
Well, he's not reluctant.
You know, like, she is reluctantly going to come to see him as a love interest because he's the only other guy
of her age, yeah.
Who, the guy seems like kind of a slacker and eventually evolves into a badass kind of improbably.
He takes a bit of a hero's journey.
Yeah, and it sort of.
I said a bit.
And he kind of takes the hero's tesseract where he's just like, I'm a hero now, blah.
Hero's cliff notes.
Yeah. And we got Lance Henriksen as the mayor, which is pretty great.
Is it just me, or does Lance Henriksen look less like Lance Henriksen than I remember Lance Henriksen looking like?
Yeah, he's not quite as Lancey or as Henriksen-y as he once was, maybe.
I mean, I'm thinking like Near Dark, Aliens.
Well, him and John Hurt, basically, like him and John Hurt, like went into the little Brundlefly chamber with a pair of chaps and kind of came out both these individual people. Now it's like, huh. Well, you look sealed in with 11 herbs and spices, is what you look like.
No, I think you nailed it there, Charlie. Never mind. I am. My curiosity is sated.
So we've got a garden party that the lady is catering that gets crashed by said giant wasp.
Can we describe said garden party as sublimely douchey?
Yeah, it seems like. Well, we could describe the guy who is throwing the party as sublimely douchey.
There is that, yeah.
In a weird, like, Steve Buscemi meets Pauly Shore meets Crispin Glover way.
Who was that?
I'm pretty sure it was Steven Crispin Glover Pauly Shore Buscemi.
But I mean, was he? Has he okay. God damn it. Is he in something we've watched recently? He seemed incredibly familiar, but is it just because he looks like so many other people?
Clifton Collins has been in a million things. Like, he's been in a ton
but
of
is
stuff.
It something recent? Like, because it was driving me nuts, and I just refused to Google it.
There was a moment where I was sure that he was, that was Pauly Shore.
Really?
Whoa.
He's like,
okay,
holy
hang on.
Shit. That's old Pauly Shore.
If we can,
it's amazing.
If we can steal a version of a "How did this get made?" question, which they always ask at the end of each thing, would this movie be better if Nicolas Cage were in it? Would this movie be better if that was in fact Pauly Shore?
Kinda.
I kind of think maybe.
Kinda.
Now that you bring it up, I kind of think it would have been cool to see the weasel get stung.
Because like it wouldn't surprise you, right, for a movie like this if they had.
No, that would have been a great.
Their
pull.
Like their little bit of stunt casting was, you know. Was Pauly Shore, and he's been doing these more subdued, kind of weird things. He was in, this dude was in Pacific Rim.
Yep.
Oh, okay, I've seen that. I'm looking him up now on IMDb.
Multiple other things.
As much
he's
as I lied
one
about
of the vegan
that.
Police in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Nope, that's it.
Okay.
Okay, good, now we're good.
So, douchey kid, douchey, the, you know, trust fund baby and his mom are throwing the garden party that they threw every year, that her husband threw, and her husband has passed away. And her son has...
Oh, Boondock Saints 2, that's the other one. Yeah, there we go.
Ugh. Has mixed their growth hormones that the company produces into fertilizer and sprayed it all over the plants to get them to grow. Which makes, you know, giant wasps. And, you know, like, whatever for that story. That's totally fine.
Well, because anything that makes anything grow makes any and all things grow. That's science.
That's that Polyphonic Spree song. Yeah.
What?
All things grow into giant wasps and kill you.
I gotta start listening to Polyphonic Spree.
Yeah. So for a while, we've got garden party going on, and then suddenly wasp attack, and for a long time, people run around and don't go inside, while suddenly the bartender dude becomes the hero.
Yeah, the...
He's just like, everybody needs to get inside now! And nobody does.
And the fact that someone had to shout that is already problematic. But the thing that I was having problems with, when you get to this point, like I said, I did not expect giant wasps, you know, because these things are kind of like those monsters in Mimic. I mean, they're big. And because I didn't expect that, I was like, how are they not going to wipe out the entire cast of this film in the next 4 minutes? Because you've got thousands of wasps that apparently kill with a single sting, buzzing around everybody's heads. And the wasps clearly are, like, you know, not sentient, but, like, they have intent. Enough to be like, trying to sting people, and running about flapping your arms around your head does not prevent you from getting stung by a regular hornet. And so I was like, they've got like 15 people is all their cannon fodder they have to work through. Everybody's going to be dead in like seconds here. I don't get how they're still running around. And, like, they throw a tablecloth over their heads and kind of run. I'm like, that's not how, like, wasps do not work that way. they fly under things. That's dumb. It's not armor. It was really bizarre. And then when you get the first big fuck-all wasp, I was like, oh, okay, like, we're kind of changing the game here.
Like, everybody that gets stung has a giant wasp burst out of them.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
But that then, and this is the wrong use of the phrase, but that begs the question, what happens to the little wasps then?
Oh, you know, they go about their lives. They buy a sports car to compensate, and they...
Okay.
I don't know.
But I mean, honestly, like that, I was like, wait a second. There are now 20 big fucking wasps. Those little wasps would be much more effective at infiltrating a house. What happened? Like, they just go away.
They're just all going to fuck off and watch TV.
I guess. Something. Right? Why?
They're binge watching Jessica Jones. That's what they're doing.
Worthwhile endeavor.
So, I think the problem with this movie is that very quickly. Well, actually, there's an endless amount of running around at the garden party when anybody with half a brain would have already bolted for the house. And then, like, maybe a third of the way into the movie, we get down to, like, four characters in the house. And then we're, like, dark, enclosed space, very few wasps happening, and it just kind of drags.
Yeah.
From where I'm sitting.
No, I can buy that. It's a little saggy in a portion there. I like the gonzo big fuck all monsters aspect, though. Like I said, like there's a lot here that kept kind of making me think of Slither.
Okay, except these monsters are sci-fi level effects.
Oh, like Sci-Fi the Station.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't S-Y-F-Y. Where do you land on this, Charlie? disappointed, apparently.
I love the exasperated.
Yeah, just, it just sort of like, I mean...
Like stuff.
I mean, it's just sort of like... Well, I mean, the thing about it is like, you know, you could... You can talk about the shape of the sprinkles. You can eat the fucking cake. I mean, it's sort of like how long people run around the garden party. Like, who care? Who cares? Like, why does that matter? Like, inside the thing... Like,
well, it matters because it makes the movie drag.
Well, how? How could it possibly drag? The part where people are running around at the beginning part, like, when the wasps are going crazy, like... I mean, I don't want to do one of those, like, well, actually, if you go back and rewind the blah, blah, blah. I don't want to do that, but it cannot be more than 3 minutes.
At most. I noticed even that much.
You know, before you break off into, like, those, you know, the cougar lady getting her, the things coming out of her mouth, and then the one guy getting attacked, and the other thing happening, and this guy busting into the thing. Yeah, I'm talking about, like, see, like once you get into the set piece stuff, I'm talking, you know, because you're describing the running around bit. But I was thinking, like, once things break off into, like, you know, set pieces, kind of like Slither, where you, like, set piece, run, you know, that kind of stuff. that's all what we're really doing there. And then the stuff inside, like, I didn't care that it was taking a long time because it was fucking gorgeous to look at. There's nothing on Sci-Fi Channel that looks anywhere close to how well that was shot. Beautifully lit, beautifully shot. So cool to look at.
Real, real dark.
Oh, it was beautiful to look at.
Real hard to see. All I have is the movie that I watched.
Apparently you didn't, because you just sort of like, I almost feel like I should go back with a stopwatch and like time these things for like how twitchy you are watching some stuff sometimes.
Well, but there's also, I mean,
no, like Mistress of Lisbon, drags, but it's 4 hours long. You know? I mean, like, you brought us Hamlet drags because it's 4 hours long. You know? I mean,
an 18-minute short can feel like 30 seconds. A 30-second short can feel like 18 minutes. It just depends on if it's capturing you or not.
Yeah, there are there are movies that are literally too long, and we've talked about that a lot, but sometimes they just feel too long.
Yeah, like Roger Ebert said, no bad movie is ever too short, and no good movie is ever too long. I am not a twitchy dude. I can sit and watch a 3.5-hour movie that's, you know, a beautiful meditation on life and death. You know, I've watched Seventh Seal, and I enjoyed the shit out of it, and that is just nothing but talking. But...
See, I like the fifth. Well, I like the fifth seal better, but you know, that's okay.
Oh, hipster!
Well, you know, that,
I like
the seventh seal is when they finally went to space, and that was the seventh seal in the hood. He's just like shooting craps with death instead of playing chess.
This becomes a really, and it's all sponsored by Taco Bell, which is really strange.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you! I'm hungry now.
Well, whenever anything involving craps, you have Taco Bell.
Yeah. It's still hungry.
Because you got like the garden party. So the people are running around screaming, then there's a little set piece, and then you go back to the people running around screaming, and that kept happening, and I was just like, how the fuck are they still running around screaming? How are there any people left to be standing running around screaming, or how come they haven't gone inside yet?
I think that's just because they had to get through their set pieces, and that was the background they had for it.
Because it seems like in a movie structured to make a little more sense, that scene would have been towards the end. You know, like the garden party at the end of Alligator.
Considering how bonkers that is.
Because there's a lot of neat shit going on there. But then once they get in the house, which is the bulk of the movie, you've only got three people really after the like douchey dude gets half wasped.
Yeah, okay. What happened there?
I don't know. That was one thing I really liked.
No, I mean, like, those things, I think it's really interesting, and I kind of dug it, but I don't get why he was different. Or do we just not know?
Well, he got stung in the hump, didn't he?
Wait, what?
He got stung in the hump.
Okay.
I just want you to say that again for me.
I'm going to listen to it on repeat every night before I go to bed. No, but, okay. How to phrase this kindly?
Well, okay,
no,
so
I'm just hang on. How to phrase this kindly? I watched this movie almost a week ago, which means my recollection of it is hazy at best because I don't pay a lot of attention to life in general, much less every movie we watch, which is part of my own failing. I should take notes again. did the hump mean something?
Well, I'm thinking that, like, because when everybody else gets stung, it seems to get into their body cavity and then off to the races we go. Whereas, like, he's got this fatty pile of the Donald Trump thing on his shoulder.
And yeah, but what if, like, what if he had a what's that called when you, like, in utero you absorb your twin? You know, like John Wayne and shit?
Yeah.
What if it stung his hump, which is actually his, like, not outwardly visible conjoined twin, and that's what turned into a wasp, allowing him to remit that. Oh man, that'd be fucking. I got a boner now. This is fucking hot. I like this. Okay, all right. I don't care what the movie actually did. That's what I'm doing in my head from now on. That's cool.
I mean, I think you can make a case for that, where the wasp is just like, stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin the rhythm and the style that you're used to, and it goes to sting him, but it stings him in the hump.
The humpty sting.
Yeah.
Is this your chance?
It's your chance to do the sting.
Oh?
God.
Sting me, baby.
I love the part where the little guy, the little wasp growing out of his shoulder, eats up all the crackers and the licorice.
Just
fucking great.
Oh, my God.
So, like, bits of this that I liked, anything Lance Henriksen says.
Oh, he has one of the best little shots where, like, initially when the wasp was starting to flit around more and more, he's got some canapé in his hand, and all you hear is a flitter, flitter. And he looks back at his hand, and it's gone. He's like, I love, that scene. In fact, this time around, I just rewound that and watched that, like, three times. Go, like, that is great.
another thing this movie does that I really enjoyed, because it evokes a certain... I don't know, like an era of TV and style that I have a soft spot for. The first time someone, like, squooshes one of the small wasps.
Yeah.
And you get that, like, Nickelodeon level gack from where they squish the bug that is just so over the top. And I was like, yes, I like you, movie. You and I are buddies now. That is a choice to make sure it is of a certain thing to make people like me go, yeah. And, like, I appreciate that. That's cool. Like I said, I don't think the movie fires on all cylinders, but there's a lot here that I like. I wanted the sum of the parts to amount to something a little greater. But there are really neat things happening. That would be just one of those little ones, like that moment with Lance Henriksen, or, like, the fact that the bugs turn into just fucking exploding Ghostbusters levels of goo, and I don't know.
I think for me it was just the weird inverted structure where you have your big action set piece and then a lot of walking around talking and hiding just kind of slowed it down. It was like, oh, but we were getting set to get crazy, but we're out of people to get crazy with. So, partly that and partly lead hero guy. Fuck that guy.
Our caterer guy?
Yeah, like, and it's not like, I don't think that he was annoying as a character. It was that he was incredibly inconsistent as a character. I just could not get a bead on what he was supposed to be. So when he starts giving orders and stuff, I expect, like, oh, so have you been in a situation like this before? Have you been in the military? Is there, like, some story you're going to tell?
I mean, isn't he inspired by something Lance Henriksen...
Well, yeah, then, like, Lance Henriksen keeps saying, like, this boy, he's a good boy, he's a strong boy, he's a brave boy. I'd kiss him on the mouth, but for no reason. Like, he immediately just goes, you seem like a dude who's going to take charge. I like
you.
Well,
he's a politician. I feel like he's full of shit at all times.
But to also...
And off the guy goes, I never got a sense of that guy as a character, so it just puts a big hole in the middle of your movie.
Well, just to make a counterpoint, and not to get super, super loud, fussy, and angry. Like, on the counterpoint, like, you could be at a public pool, a kid's drowning, be like, kid, stop breathing water, or you can jump in and pull him out of the pool and try to save his ass. Like, which person are you? And is this guy's case, like, in that situation, you can cower in the corner and shit your pants, or you can try to help people. So I don't think
Doesn't
he becomes
actually tell
Rambo.
A story like that.
Yeah, he does. That's the thing. And, like, and right? So does Lance Henriksen. Like, that's the thing. There's bravado and then there's reality. I love this character, partly because I get the sense that he's in this catering job and this whole thing of like, and it, oh, here's another thing, just real side tangent to interrupt myself slightly, is like, they never do the thing of like, these two went to high school together, or like, he asked her to the dance when they were seniors and they never went, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. they never give you any of that stuff. You could think that maybe that could be part of it, but they never say that, which I really, really love, because that would have been super easy to do, and they never did that, which is awesome. But going back to it, like, he's in this catering job, whatever else, he's clever, and he's a little awkward, or whatever else, and like, I get the sense that, like, maybe he used to be better. And, like, I really related to that character because I feel like that in my own life. Like, I feel like I used to be a better version of myself earlier in life, and now I don't feel that way as much. And I feel like with this guy, he's way overqualified in terms of smarts, in terms of cleverness, in terms of, like, the way his demeanor is with people at the bar. Like, he is a natural. He's an absolute natural. And it's never cheesy. It's never Dane Cook face. Nothing. And I really love that. And it just makes me happy. And so when you see the reflection with the young lady, you could infer that her dad might have been a lot like that. Just quick with a joke and just making people feel at ease at the bar and just really being a people person. And all she ever wanted to do is make dad happy, you know? And like, and so there's all these little inferences. I love the way that those guys were written. I really did. And then Lance Henriksen, this is awesome.
Right. I mean, I do think Lance Henriksen kills his role as weird small town mayor that should be a meaningless job, but because the town is so small, it matters.
Yeah, and I would like to get him and Ted Levine from Banshee Chapter and the dude from Pontypool in a room.
Whoa.
To just McHattie?
Say stuff.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, then you got to bring it. But then at that point, like, just to be fair, though, to be absolutely fair, you've got to at that point get Powers Booth in there. And then we've got to get, what's his name?
Ian McShane.
Yeah, at that point you've just got all the masculine, you've got it swooshing into a pool. It's just sort of like, masculine.
Can we just throw some Sam Elliott in there just for me?
No, Sam Elliott for sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right.
And they're just going to talk really slow and really low.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the fuck they're saying. No. Even the script is Spice World, it'll be amazing.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine the Comic-Con panel? Hello, I'm Sam Elliott, and I'll be portraying Baby Spice. I would... Oh, my God. I would come tears of blood to go see that. It would be the best.
Now, I erased the thing from a few weeks ago, and that is the name of your biography now. Autobiography, excuse me.
I would come tears of blood.
Yeah.
Anyway,
a hero's journey.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like that character is really underwritten.
Yeah.
So I think he goes through a couple of iterations of dude, and
but do you think? Is there any? I'm not saying this condescendingly, but do you think it would have been just as easy to overwrite him and expositize him and the relationship with the girl? Or do a flashback? Good God, if you did a flashback with Dad at a party, like Jesus.
The fact that there was another shitty choice they could have made doesn't mean that the choice they made was a good one.
Well, but that's a matter of opinion, though. I'm just saying that, like, there is a steep cliff of complacency and pedantic lameness that could happen with those type of characters that we've seen a ton of times, you know. And it's like they don't do that, and I like that. I admire that.
You don't have to give me a word of backstory about him. If I feel like his behavior, if I feel like he has a personality and his behavior flows naturally throughout the movie.
So you just didn't find him internally consistent?
But yeah, I didn't. I didn't think that here is a guy who has a life beyond this line that he's saying right now. Just, I couldn't get a read on him.
Hmm.
Is he funny? Is he awkward? Is he popular? Is he autistic? Is it, I have no idea what this dude is, because I think all he is an engine that drives this plot.
Hmm.
And on the other hand, like, I really liked what they did with the girl, because you get a decent, like, all you need to know is, like, this is Dad's catering business, Dad's not around anymore.
Yeah.
And for two-thirds of the movie, she kind of pissed me off being a load, just kind of like, I'm screaming and I have to run away and you have to grab me and pull me with you and blah, blah, blah. And then just to have her go full badass at the end was quite lovely.
Speaking of which, we should get toward the end of this so we don't spend an entire 2 hours on this movie. Well, how does this end? I honestly don't remember now. There's a big-ass wasp, right? I feel like that's a safe bet.
Well, there's the mama wasp. Yeah.
That's, we had the egg sac laying bit, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a maggot. There's like, you should eat the maggot. That'll be great.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
That whole bit. And lots of squicky, gross piles of stuff. that were not done on computer. Thank the fucking God.
Again, like, mad props. That was really cool to watch someone hold a big gross maggot.
Dumping buckets of gore off the side of the house. Like, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like, I love that. You can't do that on television. Yes, yes. Super great.
Chicky takes out douchey guy with the, like, a hedge trimmer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get the maggot that they're, like, holding hostage.
I love that.
So that they can get out of
the house. I really
like
that.
Like, yeah, you back the fuck off and the maggot gets it. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
And then they do get free, and then there's the don't you die on me, and he's like, I won't. And then there's, like, thunderous helicopter-sounding wings, and it turns out some of the wasps survived and got into cattle.
Yes.
So you have, like,
that's pretty,
little strips
pretty
of leather
dope.
Hanging off the wasps now, and they're going to go to the wasp bar.
I love the one cop getting smushed by the cow head. That is the best.
So good.
He's like, "What's looking? He's looking at the accident thing. You're thinking the thing's going to do a Die Hard one where it just pops up, you know, or something." And it's like, "I mean, no, he gets crushed by a cow head." This is like, yes. I don't know. I had even more fun with this the second time around, and I just, you know, just sort of, you know, I had the guy crush on the guy and the girl crush on the girl, and just like, and the Lance Hendrickson crush on the Lance Hendrickson. So just, I don't know. I really enjoy this kind of, it's dumb as fuck. It is stupid. It is dumb. But the joy for me is sincere, and I really, really like it.
Why don't we wrap up on this one? So Charlie, give it your final rating too.
Initially, I had, when I reviewed this after arguing with Brad McCarty for 2 days, damn near, that's Stanley for going over this. I think I did 3.5, which would make a 7. And I think, you know, repeat viewing, how much more fun and just how much joy and whatever, I'm gonna bump it up a half. So I'm gonna say 7.5. I'm gonna say 7. I had something funny and then I lost it. I always have this problem. I'm gonna say 7.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10. A B's favorite movie could have been like something completely like The World According to Garp, and have it made no sense, and that would have been cooler. But besides that, call it 7.5 out of 10.
Fair enough.
I mean, I think I kind of explained my thoughts on this movie in my like first little thing I mentioned, which is like, this is super evocative of Slither, which is a movie I fucking love, and this is a movie I really like. And I think part of the reason, like, I considered it, which is shitty to say, but like, a little disappointing, is that I saw so much of things that I think, and I think Josh maybe pointed this out, if it had gone a little more bonkers and just gone from, you know, maybe it had to go past 11, it had to get to 14 to make it Slither or whatever. But, you know, had this been a little bigger, a little broader, maybe even, this could have been one of those movies that would be like, fuck yes, I'm going to have people over and watch this. As it stands, this is a movie that I dig, and I'll tell people that if you like this movie, this movie, this movie, you should watch this. It doesn't quite get over the hump to be like a classic. It's like a Tucker and Dale. Like, it's good, but it's not like transcendent for what it's doing. So for me, it's going to be, I'll say like a 6.5 out of 10 internal conjoined twins, because screw you guys, that's a great idea.
It is indeed.
It's right up. It's
if that
right
wasn't
up there
what
with
they
the,
intended. It,
well, it's right up there with our Psycho 2, the rewrite of the Psycho 2.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think like looking at our models of movies like this, like most of which come from New Zealand, you'd like,
which I'm
you,
super
like,
glad that New Zealand keeps churning out movies like this, because that's awesome.
Thank you, New Zealand.
Yeah, you guys
for
rule.
Doing the things you do. In the vein of like Black Sheep or Deathgasm,
yeah, Black Sheep is another
one I thought of. You can see what to me this movie is missing, which is there's a gleefulness, there's a high energy level, and there's charm. And I get that some people might watch it and pick up charm. I was not charmed by that leading guy because I thought he was such a cipher, really, just like a convenient script mechanism. So missing those things, it just gets into that like sci-fi movie level of thing, and occasionally rises above it by just when it goes for the super weird shit, then you go, oh, this is the thing that could have been. if everything had the punch of just Junior with the little wasp on his hump decides to talk to the queen bee like it's his mom. You're like, that stuff is great, but there's just not enough of it, and the energy level's too low. So for me, this is like a 5.5 wasps that once got busy in a Burger King bathroom.
Would you say they were once a man?
I might.
That's nothing but trouble. Now they're the,
now they're the Humpty pronounced
with an Humpty. Yeah, okay.
Hey, can we watch Nothing But Trouble for this?
I don't think so.
Podcast?
No, we can't.
Is it a horror movie?
No.
In some ways.
It's not even a movie.
It's... I am still fascinated by that movie.
It is. It is. How could that have ever gotten made?
I mean, to be fair, one of the best possible episodes, if you've never listened to it, even though I bring it up all the time, of the podcast, How Did This Get Made? Nothing But Trouble is a really good episode to watch Jason Mantzoukas and Paul Scheer and June Diane Raphael talk about that movie and have them all go, we're only 20 minutes in, you guys, all this crazy shit, and we're only 20 minutes in, and they get further, and we haven't even mentioned the giant babies, and they just keep, it is so bonkers that listening to them be incapable of explaining to, I believe in that one, a live audience, how we've not even scratched the surface and we're already running up against our 90 minutes. Yeah.
So what you gotta do is watch Nothing But Trouble, Mom and Dad Save the World.
Oh my God.
And, stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah. That is your perfect movie trilogy. I think I watched all of those in a weekend.
I'm pretty sure that's your perfect movie trilogy to summon your Lathotep.
You know, saying Nothing But Trouble is just so fascinating, you can't look away. At least it was for me. Mom and Dad Save the World, I thought was actually kind of brilliant. And Stay Tuned is amazing.
Yeah, no, Stay Tuned is awesome.
I've not seen Stay Tuned. We've brought that up a few times on the show, and I keep forgetting to watch it when we're not recording.
I would almost, most of the time.
John Ritter, Chuck Jones.
Yeah, no, yeah. I like the sound of it. I haven't gotten around to it.
I would, throw a book at me if you want to, but I would also maybe on a minor, maybe like on a supporting role, I would throw My Stepmother as an Alien in there, just because like,
yep.
Because that is just so like another one where you're like, how did this occur?
Join us next week for Weren't the Alien? 80s Fucked Up.
No. My Stepmother is an Alien or Earth Girls
Are
Easy.
Yes, oh,
Jesus Christ.
Bonkers,
early Jeff
weird
Goldblum.
Ass bullshit. Yeah.
And you know how much orange, I love Jeff Goldblum.
Orange furred Jim Carrey and like blue Jeff Goldblum get shaved and Gina Davis and... movies.
I'm telling you guys, them. If you weren't born in the 80s, you really fucked up.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, you lose a little on the swimwear end of it in terms of now versus then, but then you really lose out on the creativity. Except for
there are people who are born in the 90s now who are doing things like, oh. How can you be a person? You were born in the 90s. How can you be my boss? You were born in the 90s. None of which has anything to do with
it. We should really take a break.
We'll take a quick break, we'll regroup, and we'll be back with our other two films.
That's true.
And next up, we have the Banshee chapter, or El Capítulo de la Llorona. My Llorona. There's no Banshee in Spanish because that's an Irish monster, right?
So it's just Banshee.
La Llorona is a similar legend of a lady who drowned in a river or something and runs through the night crying.
Fair enough.
Screaming kind of deal. So, you know, things that scream is basically our deal.
But
so, Banshee chapter, apparently everybody else thought I was going to hate it. So that's interesting. Well, now, what was it that you thought would make me hate it, Matt? What was making you cringe?
I'm not entirely sure how to articulate it, I guess. And this is a thing that I do want us to talk about in general with this movie, because what this movie does... And it's based on, like, I think as we mentioned last week, kind of From Beyond, you know, maybe more the movie than the Lovecraft, and it takes kind of the idea of other dimensional beings that we're not normally aware of, and then runs it through the filter of a ton of pop culture conspiracy stuff some of which is, you know, based in legitimate whatever, some of it's just crazy. You know, the numbers stations, which are real things. There's just weird numbers you can listen to on various places on the earth that you can pick up on a radio. MKUltra program, which is a real thing that happened, and then this adds a layer of weirdness to it. And then you throw in your Hunter S. Thompson analog, which Charlie and I will have to talk about a little bit later, that, you know, they layer all these different weird things to create this insane stew of totally batshit premise versus slightly grounded in reality. And there's so much going on that I thought you would just kind of throw the bullshit flag up on this play. Huh. You know what I mean? Like, there's a thing where you just kind of go, look, that's just a bridge too far for you to kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it's asking you to suspend too much disbelief. And I guess I kind of thought you would throw that flag up at some point, because I resisted temptation to do that myself sometimes, but at the end I think this thing all pays off in a way that I liked. But I don't know. That was kind of my theory on that.
Yeah, I will say, so I watched, like, the first 10 minutes of this intending to watch all of it of an evening, and after, like, the second or third time the tablet I was watching it on thumped onto the bed, because I fell asleep, I was like, okay, we gotta stop.
Oh, yeah.
But I kept losing it, like, falling asleep right after the jump scare at the beginning.
Which is a really good jump scare.
Is it?
I loved it.
Is it?
Which one was that?
Okay.
That when you know, the initial, the when one, they yeah. were doing the thing that makes you go, oh, crap, is this whole thing gonna be a shaky cam movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, all the weirdness happens, dude's gone, he goes outside, and I liked it because it's fucking broad daylight. And he runs around the corner of the building, and there's his eyeless friend screaming at him. And I was like, I did not see that coming. Like, I liked that. I thought that was a really smart
scare. I didn't see it coming, but it was kind of a wah-wah.
Well, I mean,
for me.
He didn't see it coming either. Ha-cha-cha-cha. Beautiful. But no, for just sitting at the counter in my kitchen, like where I'm sitting right now, that made me jump. And I was like, okay, like, well played movie. There's not a lot of things that make me startle out of my chair. Like, that did it. So, I don't know. It worked.
Well played, Crisscross. You made me jump.
Yeah. To be fair, I did realize earlier today I'd been wearing my boxers backwards for 2 hours. So, there may be more truth to your words than normal.
So, anyway, from that 10 minutes, what I knew about this movie was it's found footage and is prone to dumb jump scares. So I was already composing in my head the perfect combination of words to express my disdain for the movie,
right.
And was tempted to not even watch the rest of it. And so, like, made myself sit down and watch it.
Some form of journalistic integrity.
Yeah, and then, like, oh, it's not all going to be found footage. Well, thank God.
Yeah, I started that on my notes, too. I was like, oh, good, look at you, movie. Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is just purely kind of the equivalent of a flashback. It is setting the stage for the story to follow, yeah.
And then once it kicks in...
I was warned of that ahead of time, so that pleased me. Yeah.
I thought it was great. Like, once it starts firing on all cylinders, so once Chicky gets to Hunter S. Thompson's house, it really... It does that story pretty damn well. It doesn't... Like, it doesn't take the gonzo direction that From Beyond does.
Yeah.
Where, you know, so instead of your, like, big squishy things, it's got... barely glimpsing things because they have no money, right?
And in this reality, it's not that you're
craft kind of deal.
Yeah, in this reality, it's not that you're drawing through the big, you know, cyclopean horror. It's wearing your skin. I mean, they say that the idea is like these things want to get through and be us, you know.
Yeah, it takes your skin off for you,
right?
Yes.
And so, like, okay, like they found a good narrative way to justify that, which I think is really smart, you know. So anyway, moving on.
Yeah, the only place where it got a little too precious for me was when Hunter S. Thompson goes, "You ever read any H.P. Lovecraft? There's a story that's this movie that we're making, only we're not gonna, we didn't, like, get the rights to the story or anything."
I don't think you need to, dude.
But it wasn't like, we're not gonna call it the adaptation of that story, but there's this story that he has that is exactly this. It was like, that was way too on the nose, but it was mercifully brief.
There was that, and that was when the largest amount of vibrating rage was right then because he drops the buy the ticket, take the ride line, which is like, no, that's hallowed ground, motherfucker. You don't drop that without making sure you know what you're doing. You know, it's like, I wrote gigantic letters, damn it. And then I stopped it for about 15 minutes, then calmed down, and then started it back up again. Because that was like as if you're eating a bowl of cereal, which I don't know why you do because cereal's awful, but if you're eating a bowl of cereal, somebody walks up to your table and just like starts peeing in it as you're eating it. Like, hi, morning. Enjoying your cereal?
I was going to say we have two things to address. Now we have three.
And that's, oh, goodness.
One, I would say that while, yes, this is, you know, based on From Beyond, if they tried to call it anything related to that, you would never get out of the shadow of a Stuart Gordon movie, and I can totally see why you wouldn't want to have that baggage attached to your
flick. Oh, sure.
Yeah, so don't have the whole thing where he tells you the plot of the story.
Agreed. No, I agree. That line is dumb. But I totally see why, you know, you might want to do a lot of the themes and the ideas, but not refer to it. So had they not had that line, I'd think it's fine not calling it that. Two, the Hunter S. Thompson analog, who is called something else. I forget what. Charlie, we talked about this a little bit off mic. You want to explain really briefly your thoughts and just realizing that suddenly they had put not quite Hunter S. Thompson into the movie?
Well, it was one of those things where initially it was white hot rage. because it was like, he is one of the great, great heroes of my life. I have a sincere, sincere admiration and love for him. And it was one of those things where it's like, no, don't do that. And that really made me mad. But it unclenched over time. I think initially it felt insulting and frustrating and just fucking ridiculous. And why on earth would you do this? And then it was like, well, if you relate it into all this stuff with the chemical experiments, all this kind of stuff, and, you know, for a little while they buy back a little bit of that credit, partly because Ted Levine does such a good job. Like
he is excellent.
That's another reason why I think they buy back some of that credit, is that he does well, you know, and that's good. But goodness, when they buy the ticket, take the ride, it's like, no. That's gospel, man. Like, you don't mess with that. That whole passage. I can talk about Hunter S. Thompson for a day, but
sure. But I mean, I think that you and I had very similar thoughts on this.
But it was the unsphincting that was impressive. I mean, I know that makes me sound like egotistical, but it's like to get me to get off of my ledge of anger for that to the point where I was like, I was accepting him as a character and kind of going along with it. It was like, well, good job, movie, because he's like, that was pretty good, you know, like making me be the most important part of this whole scenario. But it was like, it was just like digging nails into Palm's anger to the point where I was like, I kind of accepted it on through. Although something does happen with his character at the end, which I'd be very curious to see what you guys think about that.
Okay, but so now, as far as just having that as a character, if you think about it unemotionally, which is hard to do, because I think you and I had similar reactions, which is, oh, fuck you, you're going to put Hunter S. Thompson in your story. It does make perfect sense to have your counterculture representative.
Sure.
If you're going to have an MKUltra movie with weird psychedelic shit and taking drugs to get other planes, like, it makes sense to have that character. And it could have been, what, Thomas Wolfe from the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test?
Sure.
You know, you could have done him, or you could have done, there are other folks, you could have had a Ginsberg in there or something. You know, you could do that. But is there a better choice than Thompson? Probably not. And so, at least not one as iconic.
Yeah.
And so,
I think they write him well.
And that's the thing, is I think they were wise in going, you need that kind of guy. You need the guy who has done the drugs, done the time. And again, to be one of the other lines, along with the Lovecraft thing, that pissed me off, the guy that has bought the ticket and taken the ride. Again, I thought that was a bridge too far. That pissed me off. But you need that guy that is, you know, got the mileage and the years to give everything that happens weight. And they do that, but I do think that the character they create, despite being clearly an analog for Hunter S. Thompson, he carries his own gravitas and he holds his own as an individual with some slightly different ideas, though very similar. And eventually I came to accept it. And then once I'd accepted it, then that was just nails on a chalkboard when he says, buy the ticket, take the ride. Because I'm like, fuck you. You just spent all this time making me go, I don't hate you because you're not exactly Hunter S. Thompson. And then you throw it all away for a second. Drove me nuts. Third, why the fuck do you hate cereal?
Cereal is...
What's wrong with you?
It's wet bread, man. Wet bread's bullshit.
Oh, God damn it, Charlie. Damn it, we were so close to only ganging up on Josh this episode.
No, I've always had this grand dislike for cereal, because it's just like, it's like, it just, Charlie. I don't.
Yeah, because like, you don't do stuffing.
What, really?
Some stuffing's okay. Some stuffing's okay. It's just, cereal is wet bread. It's like in the sink when you got a bunch of dishes.
I mean, if you eat it slowly.
Pick up the pace, motherfucker. Come on.
I mean, to be fair, I'm a fatter man than you. So maybe I understand cereal in a different way.
I don't know.
Okay, but I don't understand the stuffing, like some stuffing is okay thing, because stuffing is by definition.
No, but
bread.
Good stuffing has that crunch on the outside.
It's purposeful. Stuffing's purpose
for dinner tonight.
Cereal is a cop out.
How about biscuits and gravy? How do we feel about biscuits?
Gravy is
and
a
gravy?
Food? Biscuits are a food.
But are they never the twain shall meet?
No, they're fine. That's fine. They're both foods.
But isn't that actively making bread soggy?
Milk is a drink.
Wait, what?
Milk is a drink. Cereal is a food. You don't combine them.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay, wait, huh.
Biscuits are a food. Gravy is a food. Perfectly fine.
I mean, do you eat soup?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, but what about like a dumpling soup? Like chicken and dumpling soup?
That's different.
Or what about just dumplings in general?
That's different.
I mean, that's wet bread.
Well, no, it's not wet bread. No, but it's like, when you put syrup on pancakes, that is one of the most awful things ever. It's terrible.
Agreed. Pancakes are the devil's sweaty asshole. Like, no one should ever eat a pancake. I actually had a long conversation about the hierarchy of breakfast foods just yesterday. That's really weird. Okay, anyway.
Y'all guys ain't right. I make pancakes every Saturday morning.
Oh, pancakes are fucking disgusting. I'll make them because I have to.
Butter's the thing.
No, of course you need butter, but come on. Like, let's be clear. Belgian waffle, pancake, maybe.
Sure, but I ain't got a waffle iron. I'm not some fancy waffle iron having carpetbagger.
Between the two of us, the one of us more likely to have $20 to spend at Target on a waffle iron is you, son. Waffle iron is not a plaything of the rich. A Belgian waffle iron, to be sure. But
I would have to go to Belgium.
No, Belgians actually don't have anything called a Belgian waffle. That is purely an American invention.
Well, of course, there's
it's called
a
Royale with cheese. Yeah. Let's get back to the fucking movie.
Must we? Because I'm really getting hungry. Seriously.
Matt's going to go to Taco Bell and come home and eat some Cap'n Crunch.
Actually, I do have... Oh, my God, you're right. Nope, never mind. I have nothing to argue with there. Okay, moving on.
Exactly. So our basic plot here is that in the late 60s, early 70s, military did some, or NSA, whatever, did some tests with this psychedelic drug.
NSA, come
that
on.
That turns out to be extracted from...
The pineapple gland.
Human pineal glands. Yeah, they say pineal.
Yeah.
Like, we insisted that it was. They say pineal in From Beyond.
Which drives me nuts, I mean, to be fair, they just take the existing MKUltra plan and add the secret ingredient of some woman's pineal gland juices.
Yeah.
Because she came to life for a short time after dying. And so she's the one that they call, what is it, the original source?
Yeah.
So they refer to it as that, and you find out eventually, like, oh, it's her pineal gland juice that they're adding to the existing MKUltra drug, which creates transmitters, which is what teaches us the formulas to make better drugs to better transmit, which is why the number station exists. It ties in pretty tightly. I like it.
Yeah, that was pretty fucking neat, having the numbers being read off while she's looking at the chemical diagram on the blackboard.
Very cool.
And going, oh, well, shit.
Yep.
So yeah, you get enough of the drug, you see the things see you, the thing comes through and gets to wear you. And then, from then on, is kind of passed by touch, right? That's what we find out at the end?
Yes. Is that once someone in the room has it, you don't have to have taken the drug to be affected by it.
Right. So, I don't know. It's neat. I thought it was neat.
I'm gonna ask the kind of obnoxious question. Although, that thing we talk about when the chemistry homework's up on the chalkboard thing, that whole sequence when she's in that house... That is unbelievably well done. It is just creepy, and the lighting is so well done. And when she's down in the basement, it's like, good god dang. Like, oh, man,
everything about that scene is perfect. Yeah, that entire scene earned the Mad Alley pucker.
Yeah, man. Like, that is,
and then that moment when she sees the security camera and sees the person come down, she's like, oh, my god, she was just here. And then she looks and goes, 8, minutes ago.
Yeah, I wrote that down
and
too.
She,
yeah.
She's assuming it was however long ago, and then she realizes that's since I've been down here. Fuck.
Yeah, no, I was like, I wrote down like,
I was like,
wait,
oh,
what?
That's a good reveal.
It's like, what timing? Wow, the weird. This is my notes. I'm like, basement. When timing is weird. Oh, 8 minutes ago. Thank you, movie.
Yep, exactly. Like they really, I think, do a good job of deserving that goosebump moment.
Yeah,
like,
that was well done.
Yeah,
but like, so you're saying the thing about the touch thing, like. How do I say this?
I found that unsatisfying.
I'm gonna say that's real fucking stupid. Cause that's just like, that is just, it's like, if we're talking about brain gook being injected into somebody and they're being restrained and being viewed, whatever else, and you kinda just gonna go, pheh. It just seems like that's kind of a cop-out from a writing standpoint. Like, I don't know.
I'll give it two sides of a coin. I believe that if you take the premise that what they're creating when they do this MKUltra experiment is a transmitter, someone that can pick up and then absorb one of these things. Once that's happened, it's on our dimension. It could obey different rules.
Hmm. Okay.
Fine.
Yeah, I was okay with that.
I do
like,
think
once it
that is
comes
super
through.
Unsatisfying and was written as a hand-waving explanation for, shit, we got to get this thing in like two more people. And so they do write an explanation for it, and it does in a way make sense. It is nowhere near as satisfying as having it stick to only people that take the drugs, I think. Hmm. I mean, that's me. I don't know.
I thought it was all right. But at that point, I was pleased enough with the movie to go, well, okay, that way, I guess.
I was having a good enough
and
time I was going to hate it, yeah.
That allows for a fun little gotcha at the end.
Right, but I think that
yeah,
is... that is exactly, but that is the thing. It exists to allow for a gotcha and to plug a plot hole that someone's like, well, wait, how does this person get it? Oh, well, once they're in our dimension, who says they're bound by the same rules? Sure, that is logically sound, but meh.
It's
not satisfying.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, our conversation about the movie Spring comes to mind.
Right. Yeah,
I don't know why it would, but okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weak point. I don't know, man, I just... What was, I wanted to make sure I brought this up. When we watched, The Exorcist 3.
Don't remind me.
Right, but no, trust me, this makes sense. The big problem I had was that, like, this is a bunch of different ideas that each kind of deserve a separate movie. They're putting too much into one movie. I'm not sure why I didn't feel that way about this movie, because holy shit, is there a lot going on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But I do think, and this is, I've been trying to like mull this over in my head and I haven't quite figured it out. What I'm wondering is, if you're doing conspiracy theories, if you can layer them and make it seem like even more of them intertwine, that actually seems to work in their favor, you know? Because that's the whole point, is to make it seem like everything ties together in some ridiculous, asinine manner that is not true. And so maybe that's the thing, because if you tell me I'm going to make a movie about interdimensional demons that somehow find a way into our reality, cool. And we figure that out by injecting juice from a pineal gland from a dead person. Okay. I'm going to make a movie about the MKUltra experiments. Cool. And I'm going to say that taught us that there are interdimensional demons. All right. Now let's mush those first two movies together. Kind of pushing it, buddy. Tell you what. What if, on top of that, we take these... You know what number stations are? Of course no number stations are. I'm a dipshit. Well, what if we take those and say that they're not just an anomaly, but they're significant? And in fact, you know how we'd kind of think those kind of crazy things are significant and we'd probably be kind of screaming at the world about how they should start waking up and seeing the things around them? Some kind of countercultural, revolutionary, drug-addled maniac, you know, like a Hunter S. Thompson type. So, what if Hunter S. Thompson was one of the subjects of the MKUltra experiments who was injected with the pineal gland juices from some woman who died and came back to life while aliens transmitted some kind of codes through number stations that we then used in the U.S. government to draw interdimensional beings into the United States, and everyone that has any knowledge of it gets shocked so badly they can't remember they remain drug adult psychopaths that write amazing novels for the rest of their lives. That's a stupid fucking idea. But it was a really good movie. That's the thing.
That was remarkable.
But that is a stupid idea, and it was a really good movie. Like, that is too much. That should have been more suspension than I can disbelief, more disbelief than I can what's the one where you're
more disbelief than you can suspend.
What's the thing where you lift a heavy thing above you when you lay on your back? Bench press. That's the one.
Actually, what I was thinking of is the thing where you put, like, when you're a kid and you put them on your feet and you go, flying Charlie! You know, that kind of thing.
Yes, very well. Yeah. This is more than I should have been able to flying Charlie. but you know what I mean? Like, I kept watching myself, like, I was watching this movie and I would kind of have these moments where I'd go, how am I still on board with this nonsense? But I was. I guess that's kind of the, whatever they did, like, whatever that voodoo they did so well, like, it just, it worked. I don't know. Am I alone in that or did it? I don't know.
It kind of makes... They made some decent choices the way that they set it up. Filming, like, in the found footage style, but without the found footage, like, being held to found footage.
Yeah.
So they were still kind of cameras following this girl very closely, and whenever something crazy is happening, it's going to glitch out or cut or turn away, but they're not locked into that viewpoint.
Yeah.
So it got to be very immediate, but without being shitty. And then just like all of those crazy plot elements, I think they really successfully tied them together into a coherent story. And then just kind of made it fun to watch, I guess, is the heart of it. There are moments where you can see some of the seams, like this, the lady who's the lawyer at the end, who shows up kind of in the middle to give the girl the tape,
right,
is a really bad actress.
Yeah.
And that's a moment where you go, oh, your budget's showing with that. And like the whole thing about bringing in From Beyond as a thing is just like that little amateur showing, like a little lack of polish.
Well, and I read somewhere,
but for the most part, it's got so damn much energy.
Well, didn't they say that they kind of ran, they had to cut some characters out of the story? And I read somewhere, but I thought that like they had a really tough schedule and some tough budgetary constraints, and so like they.
I feel like you might be right.
I thought I read that someplace, like either in a review somewhere.
Right now.
I don't remember, but I thought I read somewhere, but they had some other characters that they cut out of there.
What's interesting about this is the first thing on the IMDb trivia is Christopher Nolan was at one point attached to direct but chose to work on Interstellar.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can you imagine that movie?
I kind of would like to fact check that. That does not sound accurate.
Right? Like, that's interesting.
That would have been insufferable.
The film was shot in 3D. What?
To have this taken as seriously as Nolan would take would just suck all the life out of it. Because it needs, like, it has a zippiness to it.
Yeah, for sure.
That comes maybe from those found footage roots.
Well, but it's also that indie horror glee.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, keeps things...
I mean, this was made for less than $1 million.
Yeah.
This also says the original script was going to be a first draft for Uwe Boll's adaptation of Alone in the Dark.
Yeah.
I think all this trivia is insane.
This also says that Thomas Blackburn is an homage to Hunter S. Thompson.
Well, clearly it was Liberace, so they're
obvious.
Way off there.
And this is the first feature for our writer-director here.
I think this is a really promising
start. I agree. That's
it's rough, it's not perfect, but...
Nor is Evil Dead, you know, like...
For as hard as I was prepared to hate it, based on those opening 10 minutes, and it's one of those that without the show I would have immediately stopped. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, I do like that the show has made me finish movies, even if I'm watching them purely recreationally, which is a douchey way to describe watching Netflix. But you know what I mean? Because there are times I'm surprised. And, like, this is one where, that first 10 minutes, I was like, uh-oh. Fortunately, I watched this in two parts myself because I had to watch a chunk of it and then go to a rehearsal and then watch it afterwards. And I was really not into that first 10 minutes. I was like, okay, ugh. And then, like, oh, that jump scare is kind of effective. And then, oh, this movie's not going to be like that. And then I was invested by the time I came back because that was around the time that reporter Chickie goes to Hunter S. Thompson's analog compound. And by then, I was like, I wonder how that's going to turn out. And so I was in, you know. I don't know. I'd be very interested to see what comes next from, looks like Blair Erickson is the writer-director. I don't know. That'd be interesting.
I actually ended up a little bit creeped out by this in a way that hasn't happened in a while. I think It Follows was the last one I saw that really stuck with me for a bit. To the point where I finished watching this evening, and then I needed to go get stuff out of the garage.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, walking out to the garage and had that lovely chill up my spine.
Yeah.
And then going, come on, you asshole. Just open the door to the garage. There's not going to be somebody in there with no eyes or a crazy tentacle waving thing. Just fucking open the door. Yeah, and I love it. Like, that's what this is for.
Yes. No, this movie, there was a point watching this where, it was when I was watching the second half, because by then it was, 2:30 in the morning. And I forget what moment I think it was maybe when they're at the tank and the face comes to the thing, kind of like that moment in Jaws when the floating head comes out of the ship. And I was just like, looked at my arm like, yep, there's those goosebumps. All right, cool. Like, wonder if I'll be able to sleep tonight. we should wrap up. We're kind of at the end anyway here.
All right, sounds good. I would hit this I think it's about a 7.
Wow!
7 cigarettes dangling from a lip of a not Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to go with a not Ghostbuster, but, whatever.
Right? It's not perfect, and it definitely has some points that you kind of snort, but you just can't deny the energy. So I thought I enjoyed it a lot. That's what
cool.
I got.
What do you think, Charlie?
Let's see. I'm glad that you guys found joy in the movie. I am. Sincerely, I do, because I think it's good. I like the way that the thing is filmed with what's her dingy from Sleepy Hollow and the house. That part, that whole part is perfect. That's so well done. The Hunter S. Thompson character, after I got down off my white hot rage, that I come to accept it. But then it raged me back up again when he was one of the subjects in the experiment. Like, fuck you in the ear. I thought the pacing was horrible. I thought 90% of the acting was horrible. I thought the writing was, look, I'm smart. Look at my smartness. Come look at my smartness and my notebooks. Come read my notebooks. They're really smart too. And I just, by the end of it, I was like, stop fucking with me. Stop telling me what to do, movie. I'm bored. So I would say 2.5 out of 10. 2.5 out of 10. Oh. 2.5 out of 10. We'll remind you with a flashback with the clothing that's very, very distinctive because we think you're dumb. 2.5.
Wow.
Let me borrow a page from your playbook, Charlie, and go.
See, I don't get to be on that role usually because I usually don't get to do that. Cause I'm usually the one that.
No, normally you like stuff.
Yeah, I'm baffled by the both of you.
Really?
I thought this would have been. It's just. I don't get it. Like, there's parts of it that are great. I just, on an overall scale, it's one of the dumbest fucking scripts. I swear to God, this is all freshman level, college level. Like, look at how smart I am, and I don't think he's very smart. Like that scene in the house is directed beautifully. But that thing at the end when the Hunter characters, one of the subjects, was like, oh, come on. Like, that's a tomato. He was a tomato the whole time. Like, who gives a fuck? Like, it's so boring.
But Charlie.
That's fun.
So
Charlie,
boring.
If he was, you guys are having the exact opposite arguments you had in the last movie. I just want to point out. Charlie, if he seems like it's all freshman level and super dumb, might it be that he is so smart that it's gone all the way back around to dumb again?
Well, you couldn't be. You could be wrong or not be wrong. Could be.
I dare you to prove that wrong. Anyway, I fucking love this movie. And like I said, it confounded me that I loved this movie so much. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I think I pointed out all the things about it that I thought already, basically. There's a couple moments that are a little slow. For me, that intro is tough. Like, you earn the rest of this movie by watching a really crappy VHS level, not like VHS, the compilation level of found footage-iness in that first 10 minutes that is just, ugh.
Yeah, we're like, oh, anytime something interesting is about to happen, they're gonna
And I was really upset, and I was like, oh, wait, no, actually, I've been told this is not how this whole movie is. Never mind, I'll be patient. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, there's a ton going on here. It shouldn't work. It did. And yeah, there's weak points here and there, but overall, I was just so curious to see what they would do next that I kind of went with it. The flashbacks to like archival footage from the MKUltra experience, that stuff kind of wore a little thin, you know, things like that. But overall, like, really good. I'm gonna give this Charlie, you're gonna fucking hate me. I'm giving this an 8 out of 10. Tank girls, but not in the way you think.
There's no Lori, there's no Lori Petty to be found.
More's the pity.
So now Charlie knows the angst that I felt over angst.
Right.
Like, what's the matter with you assholes? That movie was terrible.
Yeah, but I think we were nicer to each other in that conversation, though.
We can always hope we hate each other more on Shockwaves.
Oh yeah, Jesus Christ! Do we have another?
Oh yeah, we do.
I think we should maybe lightning round that. I think at this point it's like,
we probably could. I think that'd be fine. Yes, some of us have to work in the morning.
Yes, that's true.
Not me. Oh. I mean, but like, you know, like I
some people
I'm
in the
part
world.
Of us. You guys, where are you going?
You are.
Hang on.
You're the best back. Part of us. Right, Shockwaves, ondas de choque.
Wow, do that one again.
Yeah, yeah, please.
Ondas de choque.
Oh, that's so great.
I like to choque, choque.
That is like when you're taking your intro Spanish class and you learn the verb for to shock is choquear. Like, I need nothing else
that's
in
true.
Life, really.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
It's good.
All right, who wants to go first? Well, Charlie, this was your call, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, when we have Charlie start, how much time are we going to give this?
What would you like?
I would say, let's say 53 seconds.
Wow. Specific. All right.
God help you if you go to 54 seconds.
Well, that's true.
I will drop that
You don't
hammer.
Want to know what happens in 54 seconds.
You're going to see some serious shit. Okay, on your mark, get set.
What we have on this boat is accurate. What we must have on this boat is I can't even do it. What we must have on this boat is accurate navigation. This is one of those interesting artifacts that's like that the legend is better than the film itself. But I find it interesting and charming in some weird way because like it is so pedestrian and not a whole lot happens. And somehow or other, that's interesting. I don't know really why. All the stuff with Peter Cushing and like and all his whole bit. It's wild and strange, and it's more sci-fi than it is horror. The kind of the weird sort of welder albinos, you know, that whole bit is very strange, and everything about it's odd, but it's odd at a very tortoise pace. And somehow or another, I find that interesting. Not really interesting on the overall, because it's kind of a dull movie. But for early 70s, no, not early 70s, it's like mid, later than that.
1977.
Hopefully.
You got the gist of it.
Go ahead. That's fine.
The thing that I wrote down was that the aquatic Nazi albinos come in from the ocean to lay their eggs on the beach. I was so proud of that. I was like, oh, this is delightful.
Okay, that was worth it.
I really need Richard Attenborough to narrate this movie. That would have made it 100 times better.
Oh, one of the little bit of tidbit that I wanted to throw in there was the makeup effects on the makeup effects that on the Nazi guys was done by none other than Alan Ormsby, who like that was a very strange thing when I saw it on the credits like that can't be true, and I went and looked at the thing like oh yeah it is true like, neat.
Like, I'm not my brain's not clicking on that. Who are we talking about?
Alan Ormsby, who did Death Dream and did Cat People and a bunch of other stuff.
Stuff I have not seen.
It's very weird. It's like it's just like because he's not a effects dude. He was there. I was like, that's neat.
Well, to be fair, it was not over the top zombie corpsey stuff.
No.
So like you could have a person that just works with people in general and could do that. That makes sense.
I thought that was so neat. I was like, I thought that was such a strange bit of data. I was like, well, this is a small fucking world. It's so odd. But anyway,
so
there you go.
So how do you put a number on that, Charlie? If it's boring and slow, but kind of oddly charming, where does that land?
I would say probably. I guess I would probably say 4.5 out of 10 porn stash McGee.
Nice.
Because, man, that mustache. And golly, when he wakes up from that nap, he's like, he's in the pose, isn't he? He's just like, yeah, that mattress shot.
It is very prominent, yeah. How long do we say? 53 seconds?
Yeah, I think it should take a full minute, Matt.
Oh, okay. You assume I'm going to be too verbose?
Well, no, I just... Charlie overwent his time, and I felt like that was fine.
All right, I got my phone set with a timer for 1 minute on my side, then.
All right, go for
starting
it,
starting now. This movie is the new platonic ideal of Nazi zombies for me. It is filled with completely annoying and unlikable protagonists. The special awful one being the dude of the couple, who I believe was modeled after the businessman from the basement in Night of the Living Dead. And this is just a complete shitbag from start to finish. Chicky is insistent upon wearing that yellow bikini as often as possible. I don't blame her. And the introduction of Peter Cushing as the lamentable SS guy that gives us all the exposition is great. Those zombies, when they're walking around, coming in and out of the water over a long period of time without a cut, is super fucking great, and I love every second of it. I do feel obligated to mention that I expect that at least 3 seconds later, they all walked up to keyboards and started playing Kraftwerk.
Oh, no kidding.
But holy shit, that's great. And I love the idea that you can pull out their goggles to kill them. Big fan of the movie. All right, time is up. So honestly, I really fucking liked this movie. And I mentioned at my rehearsal tonight that I had to go back home and watch the last 20 minutes of it. And I was like, yeah, you know, like, well, I got to head home. I got to record in about an hour, and I got to watch 20 more minutes of a Nazi zombie movie from 1977. And Calvin goes, Shockwaves? And I go, God damn it, Calvin, you're the best. And I was like, yes, that's exactly it. He goes, yeah, it's pretty good. I go, yeah, it is. And, yeah, so I'm going to say this is, for me, a 7 out of 10 sea urchin impalements.
Oh, nice.
Can you direct me to the section of the museum where there are a lot of pictures of kids on spikes? Sea urchin impalement.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know, I'm weird. in the interest of time, I'm gonna take 15 seconds. Ready, set, go. Everything that Matt said, except for the part where he likes it. He is right about the characters being awful and right about the plot being very plotting. Nazis are pretty cool, but yeah.
I'll have you know I'll be sampling you saying Nazis are pretty cool in every episode.
Merry Christmas.
Whatever. That should be my new sign-off. Like, I've been Josh and Nazis are pretty cool.
Oh my
cool.
God, can I, if I may... And I'm going to. I bought a... I went to... Our friend Mark Lazarczyk opened a soda shop
this last weekend.
And it has... it's either 1,200 or 1,600 different sodas and bottles that you can purchase. From all over the spectrum of anything you can imagine and stuff you've never thought of. And one of the things I picked up was a clear cola. Because that's silly and hasn't existed to my mind since Crystal Pepsi. And so I picked one up with, you know, just like, oh, here's the cola section. Hey, a clear one. And I bought it and I brought it home. It was only when I opened it yesterday that I realized that the logo was a bit strange and troubling. And all the language in it was German. And so you have this really severe looking eagle logo on the front. And that's when I realized it is called Nazi Cola. Nozseekola. Oh, it's a clear cola. And I immediately had to do some Googling to go, do I need to call Mark immediately and be like, dude, no, no, no. Nope. Because it is people thinking it's funny as shit to make fun of skinheads. Yeah. So it is technically true. You cannot see the cola. It's clear. And they think skinheads are dipshits. So I was like, you know what? That's a great way to use your soda brand. So, yeah, you know. A thing I thought was beautiful. Slightly related to this movie. Anyway.
Oh, I mentioned last week...
Josh needs to put a number
anytime,
on this.
Oh, yeah. It's like 3.5 out of 10. Anytime the zombies are walking into or, you know, like coming out of the water, I also got that music video vibe.
Yeah.
Like, okay, and then one of them's like going to strap on a keytar and one of them's going to walk up to a Moog and they're just going to jam. That would have improved this movie.
Okay,
make it a musical.
What is that? I mentioned last week, a bit of memorabilia or product from or whatever related to this movie. So when I was in San Antonio for Housequorum, one of the guys that was there is this really lovely fellow whose name I can never goddamn remember, who's directed a few different things. He was involved with Circus of the Dead. He did the one part of the American Guinea Pig deal recently. Real nice fellow, Green Mohawk guy, real nice guy. Anyway, he was wearing a t-shirt, I think it was on Saturday, and it looked like a band shirt, like an old, like, kind of the Monkees or sort of like one of those type of things, but it was like, it said like the Shockwaves, and it's like a cartoon version of the guys from this movie, like all their little goggles, all wearing like drums and the guitar and the bass and the whatever, and it's like, oh man, I forgot to ask him where he got that, but gosh, that's awesome.
Nice.
We just didn't think about, like, you just put it on the keyboard and the whatever, and I was like, this is what I thought of, was that wonderful t-shirt. I was like, ah, so great.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, with that, we are finished with another wonderfully contentious episode of Horror Show Hot Dog. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some films for you to watch next week. So next week we are going to have one of our periodic cinematic outings for those in the Twin Cities area. And you know, if Charlie wants to organize something in the Austin area. But we're going to go out and see Krampus in the theater because
we are
good ass horror fans, and we believe if a movie comes out from people that we have enjoyed in the past, that we should support them. We should see them on opening weekend. So we're going to hit up Krampus at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday, December 5th. 5th? 5th.
There's an echo. It doesn't seem to get
December
quieter.
6th.
Sunday.
December 6th. You're close.
Yeah, Sunday, December 6th at 7:30 p.m. at the Rosedale Cineplex.
Sure.
So feel free to join us if you're in town or if you are a short distance away.
I will
away,
create a Facebook event, too, so you have a place to look for this online.
Yes. We'll make an event, and you can come and watch. We've had super fun with these, where we'll watch the movie, and then we'll do a little chat afterwards over some beers. And so we're going to do that, and we're going to back it up with a couple of kind of randomish pictures,
yes,
if you like. We've got Devil's Rock. That's a 2011 joint from our favorite cinematic country, New Zealand.
Yeah.
And that one is available on Shudder and Hulu, I believe. And then we're going to do The Church.
The Church.
Which is also available on Shudder and various other
locations. I would tell folks, too, Josh, on The Church, just if you have some free time this week, go look into the trivia and the history of where this movie came from. It's really interesting. So go check that out. It's cool.
Neat.
Yeah, it's nifty.
Right on. And our short this week is called Slumber Party Hammersmith.
Slumber Party from Hell.
Slumber Party from Hell.
Yeah, this is another one where I like this. I hope you guys do.
We'll see how it goes.
This is touch and go here in Denver.
Yep, and you can find that short, as always, on our webpage, which is horrorshowhotdog.com. You can find us on Facebook at /horrordog. We are at horrorhotdog on Twitter. And we are /r/HSHD on the Reddits. And I regret to inform you that I've been Josh this entire time, and I'm just going to say bye.
Oh, I forgot whatever my new thing was. As far as I know, I'm Matt, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care. Have a good week. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
And seriously, kids, Nazis aren't cool. If somebody offers you some Nazi, you just say no.
Yeah.
Or preferably, no!